Bridge Boys.
Wait, can you sample us doing that for the and like take our vocals and like.
Welcome to Bridge Boys.
Bridges.
The podcast where we talk about bridges. My name is Jeremy, and this is my co-host Andreas.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are around the world.
We're happy to have you. And we may be called the Bridge Boys, but that doesn't mean that bridges and structures are only for men. Mm. In fact, most of our trolls, which is what we've been calling our fans, are actually women.
Yeah, exactly. And we wanted to take a moment and appreciate the talented women who have contributed to the built environment. So for this week, we did a ton of research on women in construction. We found a special bridge in London called the Ladies Bridge, which was built predominantly with the women workforce.
Before diving into this bridge, though, Andreas and I thought it would be cool to highlight a couple of the significant women in the history of architecture and engineering that came up during our research. So, Andreas, you can start.
So I'm going to kick it off with Emily Roebling. She is known as the first woman field engineer. So the story with this is that her husband was Washington Roebling, who is the original designer of the Brooklyn Bridge. Emily then took over as the structural engineering lead of the bridge once her husband turned terminally ill. She then also oversaw construction of the bridge. And I think what's really fascinating with this is that she never had a formal education. So she just really stepped in and, you know, executed this bridge, which I think is really badass. She did receive cursory education from her husband, but again, it was mostly self-taught in regards to structural analysis and cable construction. So
I love hearing that because I try to think of the things that I've like taught myself and I'm like
what?
I'm trying to figure out how to get the sweat stains out of my hats and she's like self-teaching how to build bridges.
Yeah. I like my story is I tried teaching myself guitar, which like millions of people do. And I couldn't figure it out. So,
one woman who I found during my research was Louise Blanchard Bethune. And she's generally acknowledged as the first American woman to have worked as a professional architect.
Mm.
So starting out as a drafter in an architecture firm up in Buffalo, New York, she worked her way up to the top and actually ran her own firm. And she was also a big advocate against the gender wage gap. And this is exhibited at one point because she refused to participate in the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago because the fair committee was paying $10,000 to each of the men who participated, but only $1,000 to the women.
What? I mean, good for her. That's badass, dude.
Yeah.
But that's insane.
It's like you look at these stats and you're like, I can't believe they like explicitly did that.
Yeah.
And then you think about how much more they still have to go, or we still have to go today with the gender pay gap.
I know.
But so Louise Blanchard Bethune, she was pretty cool and she worked predominantly on large public projects and designing 18 schools over the course of her career.
Oh, whoa, that's cool.
And if anyone's interested in seeing some of her work, her flagship project is the Hotel Lafayette in Buffalo, New York. And we'll throw a picture of that up on our website as well.
So yeah, we just wanted to cover a few women in the history of the built environment, but we now want to get into the main part of this episode, which is the Ladies' Bridge. For this episode, our story starts with an ancient eroding structure called the Old Waterloo Bridge. This is yet another bridge that crosses the Thames River in London. And funny enough, it was designed by our boy John Rennie, which our trolls might recall from one of our previous episodes. John Rennie was the designer of the new London Bridge, which got moved to Lake Havasu, as we all know.
Dude, I feel like if this John Rennie guy keeps coming up in our episodes, we have to get like jerseys with his name on the back or something like that.
Dang, the black and vice colored John Rennie jerseys. I'm about that. I'm all about that. I wonder if he has like, never mind. I was going to see if he had like family that we could get in touch with. Hey, we nerd out to your ancestor.
Just such like a D-list ancestry tree. Well, sorry, yeah. I don't mean to insult the Rennie family. What your ancestor did was nice.
So apparently the first Waterloo Bridge is generally considered to be John Rennie's finest.
Yeah, I heard that there was this sculptor who called it the noblest bridge in the world.
The noblest. So the Waterloo Bridge at that time was the most expensive ever built in Britain. This was around early 1800s. It was originally constructed as a toll bridge due to the heavy development in the area. I guess investors were looking to make some money off the transportation, as they usually are.
Dude, I didn't even know they had toll bridges back then. Like, what did you do? You had, like, they didn't have fast track, so you had to just throw a shilling at the bridge patrol and be like, let me through.
I just picture some posh, like, British dude just flipping a coin and just, like, hitting this dude.
Yeah, all in the chariots.
So, yeah, the construction on this bridge, the Old Waterloo Bridge, began on October 11th, 1811, and then the bridge was officially opened on the second anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo, which is June 18th, 1817, which is 5 days after my birthday.
Wow, 5 days after your birthday?
I'm a Gemini.
Oh my God, yeah.
All of our listeners are like, oh, okay.
That explains so much about your personality.
Yeah, unfortunately it does.
Okay, you know what's weird? What? To do a brief aside to astrology.
Yeah, let's get away from it.
So I'm an Aries. And
oh, we're going back to it. Okay, sorry.
No, yeah. Going back to the astrology. I'm an Aries. And lately people have been telling me that Aries are messy.
Hmm.
But not like... I mean, I am messy, like, in my room and stuff, but messy emotionally.
Oh.
So, I don't know. Maybe I am messy, but whatever. Mm.
I think that's why you and I get along, though.
Yeah. I think we both have very this, like, passionate about the...
Same time.
Oh, my God. Jinx.
Okay, I'll send you a Coke. I'm going to Uber Eats on its way. I did Uber Eats at a Starbucks once because it was free.
That's the most millennial thing I've ever heard.
Like, yeah, okay. Fuck.
All right, back to the Old Waterloo Bridge.
Oh, yeah, the Battle of Waterloo.
Which apparently was pretty important, which I don't know anything about the Battle of Waterloo.
Yeah, it's the part of the Napoleonic Wars with the French.
Classic Napoleon.
That guy. Talk about messy emotions.
Yeah, do you think he was an Aries?
We could look up his birthday.
So we just fact-checked ourselves, and Napoleon's actually born August 15th, which makes him a Leo. I don't really know what that means, but I think Leos are hot, right?
I don't know. The concept of, like, finding an ancient person, or like a person in ancient history, and looking at their, like, astrology sign and then, like, trying to psychoanalyze them is, like, really funny to me for some reason.
Apparently it's, like, really big on TikTok right now.
Really?
Yeah, no, like, I guess the Gen Z is getting really into astrology.
Oh my God, this makes us sound so old.
I know.
Oh, the God. The Gen Z. I actually really appreciate the Gen Zs.
Yeah, I think they're, like, they're going to be doing really well. Like, yeah. The millennials are the ones that we get hated on from both directions. Like, Gen X and the boomers, they hate on the millennials because they think we're all lazy. And then the Gen Z is like, man, those millennials, they had this opportunity, they just fucked it all up. And
we're kind of like the older sibling. We're like, we were the learning phase of how everything got fucked up. And now...
We're the awkward older sibling.
Exactly.
Gen Z.
Yeah. Which is... It feels good to be in that position. I don't mind that.
I'm cool with it.
I'll take some hits for them, you know?
Yeah. We had to be the sacrificial lamb so that they could succeed and learn about astrology of...
Climate change.
The astrology of climate change?
No, I'm just... Sorry. Like, comma, climate change.
Comma, climate change.
Etc.
Okay. So anyways... The Old Waterloo Bridge is named after the Battle of Waterloo, and that's why it's significant.
So there's a little fun fact here, but the bridge was originally called the Strand Bridge. But on June 20th, 7 days after my birthday, Parliament allowed a name change from Strand Bridge to Waterloo Bridge in the honor of the, and I quote, brilliant and decisive victory, end quote, at Waterloo in Belgium, for those who didn't know that.
I did not know that.
The Duke of Wellington defeated the French at that battle.
Nice.
I wonder if that's why Gordon Ramsay... Go ahead.
No, I want to know what you're going to talk about with Gordon Ramsay.
Well, he has his signature dish is like the beef Wellington. So I'm curious if that has anything to do with the Duke of Wellington.
I'm sure it does.
Gordon Ramsay, if really you're loves. A troll and love Bridge Boys, please, please reach out to us and let us know how the name of the Beef Wellington was coined and why. We'd love that.
If Gordon Ramsay becomes a troll, then my life will be complete.
I'll quit everything I do and just bask in that moment. I'm a big Gordon Ramsay fan.
You know, if you like Gordon Ramsay and you love the Beef Wellington, mm-hmm. you might like our producer's new line of pork skins.
Oh, no way.
Skinner's pork skins.
Do we need like a transition into that, or that's in there?
That's just in there, I guess.
So yeah, I guess I'm going to crack open a bag of these bad boys and we're going to take a little break. But when we come back, we're going to get into the demolition of the old Waterloo and get into our ladies' bridge.
Hello, this is Lafayette.
And I'm Carlos.
From Nerds Talking the Podcast.
That's right.
Where we talk about everything from UFOs.
Yep.
Comic books.
I like that.
Movies.
Uh-huh.
Streaming services.
Yeah.
Conspiracy theories.
Ooh.
Ghosts.
Mm.
Video games.
Yeah.
And more.
Kick ass.
All on Nerds Talking the Podcast.
You can find us every Friday with new episodes on all digital platforms where you find your favorite podcast, Nerds Talking the Podcast.
Now back to the show.
Welcome back.
I can't believe Little Napoleon was a Leo.
Little Leo.
All right. So by 1884, now this was, say, about 70 years later, problems with the old Waterloo Bridge started to develop. And funny enough, these problems stemmed from the increase in the river flow caused by the removal of the old London Bridge. The old London Bridge was removed in 1831 and replaced by the new London Bridge. And yeah, so this new design increased the flow rate under the bridge, which started to deteriorate the foundational elements.
It's so funny to me that John Rennie designed one bridge that ended up causing the river to erode away another bridge that he designed.
I mean, he's just looking out for job security.
Yeah, if you planned obsolescence of bridges.
Oh, that guy he's kind of a genius. So in 1924, the bridge was closed for several months until a Bailey Bridge was erected across it. And sorry, Jeremy, just for everyone out there, would you be able to tell us what a Bailey Bridge is?
Yeah. So a Bailey Bridge is just a portable prefabricated truss bridge.
Hmm.
They're nothing fancy and they just are meant to get the job done.
Functionality. Nice. So although the London County Council agreed to the construction of the new bridge, its construction was held up as money was a bit tight in the depressed 1930s.
As one would expect.
Right.
In the Great Depression.
Yeah. So then the demolition began in 1934. And this is what I think is really awesome. I always like Easter eggs or whatever you want to call it. But much of the stone from the original bridge was distributed throughout England and some of it all over the world, to be honest. The stone from the bridge ended up in a dog statue in New Zealand.
And I wonder whose dog that was.
Yeah, someone really loved their dog, which is awesome. So there's also walkways in Canberra, Australia, and even bridges in the Netherlands. Oh, and some of the original balustrades. Is that how you pronounce
it? Yeah, balustrade.
Okay. From the original bridge now serve as a railing for the walkway underneath the northern end of the Waterloo. The new Waterloo Bridge, which we'll post this for everyone. But Jeremy, just to give a visual description of a balustrade, what is that?
Yeah, so a balustrade is just like a little like stone pillar thing on a handrail. They kind of look like chess pieces.
Yeah, a pawn.
Yeah, and so we'll post a picture up on our website. But yeah, just imagine like a bunch of little pawns side by side with a rail going on top of them. And that's how you get a balustrade.
Most underrated piece in chess.
I'm so bad at chess.
Anyways, so now we get into the war. So in the height of World War II, it was normal for men to get drafted and go fight, as we all know, leaving behind numerous jobs. And most of these were industrial manual labor jobs like farming and factory. And so this World War II labor shortage hit right as the old Waterloo Bridge buckled and needed replacement. And the labor union said that they needed more time and budget for their projects because they had exhausted all of their labor options, except women, of course, because they just had that tunnel vision of this is how the world works and this is how it needs to be done.
It's crazy to think that, and this is still like such a mentality in the trades today, that like trades jobs are men's jobs and that women don't belong there. And that's totally just not the case. And that I've worked with many women in the trades who are very talented and very good at what they do. And it just really is just not a thing that women shouldn't be doing construction work.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, I know this is back in the early mid 1900s, but the fact that we still see this today is a problem.
Yeah. But it's interesting too, that this was right around the same time as the U.S. was having a similar labor shortage and mm-hmm. had the kind of the Rosie the Riveter campaign to get women to work in the factories in the U.S., right?
Yep.
And so it's interesting to see a parallel idea in England, but without the same level of like lasting, what'd you call it? Like clout.
Yeah. I don't know. So the construction was initially delayed because of the war, as we know, but due to the strategic importance of the bridge for transporting troops and supplies, they decided to press on. And that means the women were needed to fill the void left by the men who were drafted. And so on this particular bridge, we've heard conflicting numbers, but it sounds like from some documentaries and other research that we found that over 70% of the labor working on the bridge were women.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's just, I'm honestly surprised I haven't heard of this before because I feel like it should be more well known. But we can get into a little bit of that later because I have some information on how this all came about. What's also interesting about this is that their records were largely missing due to the contractor being partially liquidated in the 80s. So financial problems occurred and they liquidated it. And so they probably just threw out everything or who knows where it went.
Yeah, that's awfully convenient that right. The contractor was partially liquidated. Oh, yeah, we don't have any records of the labor working on our bridge.
Right. And so we found a really informative documentary. It's called The Ladies' Bridge. And we'll provide a link for everybody. But there's like tons of interviews of people who were there and witnessed construction. And they say like hundreds of women were working on this bridge. And you can feel their sense of empowerment, just these older women who were there and experienced this. And it just provides this like really natural energy that I definitely recommend everyone take a look at it.
No, I was just going to say, I remember watching that documentary and just listening to that lady who was a welder. Mm-hmm. She was just badass.
Yeah. What I thought was really cool is the one woman said that they felt like they were equal with the men on the construction site because they were like eating and chatting and hanging out. And yeah, it's just a really like positive focus. Like right now, I feel like in the world, there's all this crazy stuff going on. And just kind of sitting back and reflecting on that, it was really, really cool to watch.
Yeah. It's funny too, because it's an interesting phenomenon that takes place and people talk about it a lot. And it's almost a cliche to a certain extent that working on a joint effort together with someone else, you bond with them. And even if you may not see eye to eye on certain things, you build a mutual respect for each other mm-hmm. based off of your combined work ethics. And so it's interesting to see that, like, and you see it today in construction too, where there's people of very different political and philosophical beliefs, but when they're at work and they're working on the project, that all goes away. And when you're on the site, it seems like people really, they have a, they take pride in their work, and that comes before those other things.
Yeah. Yeah, you must see a whole spectrum of, you know, conflicting opinions and stuff.
Yeah, I see some very, very interesting things,
yeah.
especially in the realm of porta-potty graffiti.
Oh.
But I'm not going to get into that. Yeah, people write some really funny things and also some really insensitive things on the porta-potties.
Thanks. Well, I will say there is one caveat to all of this that we're covering. Professor Wall, who provides a lot of information on the Ladies' Bridge, she said that the women working on the bridge earned around 1.06 an hour, which was far less than the male rate, as we could probably assume for that time period. But there, I don't know, the energy that these women describe, they're still out there. They're, you know, making an impact, especially because this bridge was needed because its importance to the war. With troops and everything. But yeah, so that's a little background of the women and their impact on this bridge from a higher level. But when we come back after a few words from our sponsors, Jeremy's going to get into the construction and design that these women put into constructing the bridge.
Hi, I'm Jason Heyer.
I'm Asaph Heyer.
I'm James Freeman.
And this is Higher Education. We bring the name.
James brings his game.
Join us as we journey through a year in history each and every week.
Our goal is to find the funny in what happened.
Have a laugh and learn something too.
On Higher Education.
Welcome back to Bridge Boys.
Bridges.
So I know the significance of this bridge is more about the story of the women who built it as opposed to having any particularly architecturally impressive structure. But honestly, there's some pretty interesting structural and construction details going on here that I want to dive into. So just a little background, the bridge designers were, the architect is Giles Gilbert Scott, and the engineers were Ernest Buckton and John Quirrell. And those names don't really mean anything except for a fun fact, Giles Gilbert Scott apparently was also the same dude who designed the classic red telephone box, which is super random.
That's cool.
Now, the structure that these guys came up with is what you would call a twin multi-cell reinforced concrete box girder of variable depth with connecting transverse beams supported on pier foundations. Now, I know what you're thinking, that it's all made up in gibberish, and honestly, you're right. Just kidding. But I will break down each of those items so you can picture it in your head. So we'll start with box girder. So a box girder is a built-up member with a hollow center, which they call a cell, and typically they are rectangular-shaped, which is why they call it a box, but they can also be trapezoidal. There's three types of box girders, which are single cells, which only have one hollow section, multiple box, which have multiple hollow sections, and they're housed as a separate box, or there's multi-cell, where each box has multiple hollow sections.
And sorry, I'm just, there's a lot there, so I kind of wanted to, and each one of those types would be used for a different scenario, right? It's not like one better than the other. It's more so of depending on the situation, you would use one of those.
Yeah, it depends on a lot of factors, but basically it depends on the loading, what the architectural finish is like, and the how the costs work out. There's certain conditions where a single cell might be provide enough reinforcing, and that's that would be like the cheapest.
Okay.
But other times you want, like, it depends on the architectural desire, because the multiple box has like distinct rectangular elements, and the multi-cell just has like one aesthetic rectangular element, but you have multiple vertical sections to provide more stiffness.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So for the variable depth portion, the box girders are designed to appear like arches, but they actually function more like a beam than an arch. And a beam functions with the bending moment as opposed to arch functioning in compression. So they're called variable depth because the cross section changes as it follows the arch's tapering. And in a bridge that extends over multiple footings like this, the moment will be highest at those supports. And that's why you want more beam cross-sectional area as it gets closer to the footings. So basically, they save material where it's not needed, and it creates an elegant arch-shaped design, but it still functions like a beam.
That's cool.
The transverse beams are small beams that just run perpendicularly across the span of the bridge, and reinforced concrete piers are reinforced concrete piers. So summarizing that all back up, you have the twin multi-cell reinforced concrete box girders of variable depth, which means you have two reinforced concrete box girders, each of those having multiple cells within them. And the variable depth is the arch taper from foundation to foundation. Now, what's really cool about this bridge is that it was actually the first reinforced concrete bridge to cross the Thames River. Or I guess it's called the Thames River.
Thames.
Sorry.
Or the Thames.
It's the first reinforced concrete bridge to cross the Thames. So So because they utilize really thin box girders, the concrete required an exceptional amount of steel reinforcing to maintain its structure. And the steel reinforcing is significantly more dense than the concrete, and it greatly increased the weight of the structure. So one of the efforts they did to reduce the overall mass of steel in the bridge was to eliminate any lap splices from the structure. And instead of lap splices, they had to weld all the rebar terminations together.
And what are lap splices?
Well, funny you should ask, Andreas. To understand lap splicing, you have to think about how the rebar is engaged in a reinforced concrete structure.
Okay.
So if you imagine that the concrete is your hands, mm-hmm. and you're holding on to a piece of rebar, and mm-hmm. you're pulling it apart and trying to put as much tension into it as you can.
I could do that.
You can imagine that if you're only holding with two fingers instead of your whole palm, you're gonna slip off of the rebar
right.
faster than if you held it with your whole palm.
Okay.
And so in the same way, the concrete needs like a certain amount of distance to develop the forces in rebar when it goes into tension. And so they call that development length. So basically the friction between the concrete and the rebar is what allows it to develop its strength.
Right.
So when you consider that to build any sort of reinforcing structure, you have to bring that rebar in on a truck. There's maximum length to how long those bars can be. And so you want to have the forces run continuously through the rebar. Mm-hmm. But if you have to splice it, you need to have a way for those forces to transfer from bar to bar. So in the same idea of squeezing the bar with your hands, now you can imagine squeezing those two bars together and needing enough overlapping distance to transfer the force in one bar to the next.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So if you have enough overlap, you can transfer that force through right. the internal shear of the concrete.
Huh. That was an amazing way of explaining it, by the way. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I really went in depth there.
You made my hands feel really strong.
Well, I've never given you a proper handshake before, but I imagine that you have.
Isn't that crazy? Hands. We've never met in person.
It is wild.
Energy on point, though.
So going back to that, lap splicing is the most common way of connecting two pieces of rebar because it involves the least amount of labor. Mm. But there's other ways to connect rebar together. You can do a mechanical splice, which is less labor intensive, but it's a pretty expensive piece that connects the two. Or you can weld the ends of the bars together, which again, less material, but it's really expensive to have a welder do that. But in this case, there's so much rebar that lap splice distance added a gross amount of weight to the bridge that it was worth the cost of welding all of these bars together.
Wow.
As opposed to just doing lap splices. Hmm. And I saw a stat that there's over 1.4 million welds.
Whoa.
Just on the bridge reinforcing alone.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and to clarify a little bit, typically the labor cost is what drives design more so than the material cost.
Yeah.
Because if you can consider like a person's daily wages, it stacks up very, very high against the cost of a material. So you'll typically design things in such a way that there's more material if it makes the labor less intensive.
I think this also sheds light on like the labor gap or wage gap, right? Like they're willing, because they were paying the women so much less to do the welding, that was less than the material cost that they were looking into.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I didn't even consider that, but that's probably totally why they thought it was a reasonable trade-off to make.
Yeah.
Which sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah, 1.4 million welds on the bridge reinforcing, which is wild. And then a little bit on the construction methodology. In order to build this bridge across the Thames, they had to build a temporary 12-meter-wide gantry platform to cross the river. And so along this gantry, they had a light railway and 7 derrick cranes. And so they also ran the concrete pump across the gantry. Hmm. And this was their access for building all the different elements on the bridge.
Jeremy, so I heard something about this bridge that kind of blew my mind, and I would love for you to clarify, but I read that it is a self-cleaning bridge with rainwater.
Okay, so I also came upon this in my research, and I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So I looked it up. And apparently the Portland stone, which was used for the facade of the bridge, doesn't have the same reaction with the minerals in the rainwater that limestone would have. And so because it doesn't react, it doesn't stain.
Wow.
And so as the water rains down, it cleans off the bridge and you have a self-cleaning bridge.
Can I build a house with Portland stone?
You could do whatever you want with
it. So I do this thing where a thought pops into my head, and instead of actually thinking about it and kind of analyzing what I'm about to say, I just blurt it out. And that's kind of what that was. So you don't need to actually answer that one.
Apparently, there's a lot of stoneware stores that sell Portland stone. And so it comes from England. And if you're willing to ship it out here, then someone will build it for you.
So it's not from Portland.
Yeah, it's not from Portland, Oregon. And also another fun fact about this final design was that compared to the old Waterloo Bridge, it covers basically twice the area in plan view, but it's only about 3/4 of the weight.
Oh, wow. It's because they did all that welding instead of the lap splicing.
There you go.
I'm learning, baby.
So at one point during the construction, it did unfortunately get bombed. It was weirdly, though, the only London Bridge which was hit by a bomb during World War II. Yeah, I guess I brought that up pretty casually. It was hit by multiple German bombers on that run, though, and they were able to rebuild it, and it partially opened in 1942, but they held off on the official ceremony until 1945 when World War II was completed.
Completed. I guess
that completed. Resolved. They exited out of that program.
Did they hit Command Q to get out of it, or... Sorry, that was a tech joke. That was stupid.
And their formal ceremony in 1945, sorry for ignoring your tech joke, is, I don't know why, but there was a foot race that was held at the opening ceremony where they had a bunch of schoolboys and run across the bridge and see who could win. Yeah, this is sad. They recorded the name of the 16-year-old kid who ran across the bridge first. His name is Leonard Mitchell, but they didn't record any of the women who actually built the bridge.
Built the bridge.
Well, Andreas, that about covers all the cool insight I researched on the structure and the construction of the Ladies Bridge.
Yeah, well, thank you. So I have a few more things here that really relate to the premise of this episode, which is the ladies who built the bridge during the war. And so after the war was over, the men came back and the women, they all lost their jobs in the construction industry. And so to combat that, they organized a trades conference and called for unions to allow them job opportunities, because these women were passionate about utilizing these skills that they acquired over this time period, and they really wanted to play their part rebuilding the country. But unfortunately, their requests were denied to do so.
Dude, it's honestly such a waste.
It's like,
that you spent 4 years training all these women to be skilled laborers, and you just completely threw out this whole skilled workforce.
Yeah. And I like to think that things have gotten better. I know they're not as bad as they were then, but it's just insane to me that there was this oversight of, like, people even thought this way from the get-go. And I know there's still a lot of problems that need to be dealt with, but yeah, it's just insane to me. But even worse, so there's, like, as we mentioned earlier, that there's very little record of the contribution of women. We knew this bridge, I know we talked about this earlier, that the bridge was of strategic importance. So that led to a lot of the documents not being able to be released because they couldn't get information out to the Axis powers. And we know about the liquidation too. But the worst part about this is that for the bridge's grand opening, there was this man, Herbert Morrison, who gave the ceremonial opening, and he failed to mention the work put in by the women. And he even said, "The men who built the Waterloo Bridge are fortunate men. They know that although their names may be forgotten, their work will be a pride and use for London for many generations to come."
It's like, what?
I'm just asking myself, like, did he know? Did he, like, how blatant? How ignorant is this guy?
Yeah, he just didn't give a shit.
Yeah, but I will say, fast forward to 2015, we've had some really great work done by Karen Livesey, and we mentioned Dr. Chris Wall. And 2015, like I said, the bridge was relisted by Historic England to recognize the important and previously unacknowledged role of women in construction. And so like I said, Karen Livesey and Dr. Chris Wall, they put together this documentary and all of this information and these stories brought up by women who were there and experienced this. And they're still pushed today to get a blue plaque placed permanently on the bridge to recognize the contributions of women construction workers. And we'll provide the URL on our blog for everyone to sign that petition and get this blue plaque up. So we'd love for everyone to participate.
Yeah, and that link is also going to be in the episode description on Spotify. Mm. And it'll be on the post from Instagram as well. Speaking of which, thank you to all of our listeners. And if you're curious about to get more insight on our podcast and who the Bridge Boys are, then follow us on Instagram, Twitter, at Bridge Boys Pod, and recommend us to your friends. We live off of the peer-to-peer recommendations, and we love it.
Yeah. And anything, any feedback or anything that our fans want, listeners need, let us know. Again, I just wanted to thank all of the lady workers out there in the trades who are helping build our country up and make it better, that we appreciate that. And I just want to say thanks again.
And speaking of our appreciation for the fans who email us, we wanted to give a quick shout out to Adam T from Ohio and Elisa A from Portland, who are both fans that none of the Bridge Boys have ever met before, but felt so inspired by the podcast that they reached out and sent their appreciation and some recommendations. So if you're a random troll out there and you love the podcast, please, please, please email us. We love corresponding with our fans. You guys are the reason why we're doing this.
Thank you so much. Again, all of our listeners, we'll see you next week and talk to you soon.
Bridges. Bridges.
Love you, Mom. Mom, if you're listening to this podcast, I would be so happy to know that you listened to this far into the series, and I love you.
Maybe we all just take a moment and appreciate our moms for the ladies' bridge.
Yeah, call your mom. Everybody listening, call your mom.
Tell her you love her.